move to the next case, the United States versus Abel Rodriguez Garza. Mr. Delia.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Anthony Delia, and I represent Abel Rodriguez Garza. I would like to begin by renewing my written motion for the defendant's objection to Rule 28J and Circuit Rule 28E filing of February 8, 2005. I hope that the Court received that. I think that it will help us to talk about this case if we begin with what this case is not, because this case is not a plain error case. United States versus Cotton provides that an appellate court can correct an error not raised at trial. And it provides that there must be error, that it must be plain, and that it affects substantial rights. And then the court can, in its discretion, if it believes that it affects fairness, integrity, or public reputation of judicial proceedings, intervene. But that's not what this case is, because there was no error. Mr. Rodriguez objected vehemently throughout these proceedings, which brings us to the second thing that this case is not. This is not a case that is controlled by Almendarez-Torres. And the reason why it's not controlled is Almendarez-Torres, in notes in that case and subsequent proceedings, has always said that one of the reasons why the case was decided that way was because Mr. Almendarez-Torres did not object to his prior convictions.
You have to help me on this. The judge imposed an alternative sentence. Both sentences have to be vacated and sent back?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why?
Because, as the court is well aware, the Supreme Court has recently reiterated its holdings from Apprendi and the subsequent cases that it doesn't matter whether you call it an element or a sentencing enhancement. If it changes the maximum penalty, and this isn't even within the range, if this changes the maximum penalty under law, then it must be found by a jury. In this case, Mr. Rodriguez could have only been sentenced to 2 years under what he was pled guilty to and was eventually convicted of. So a sentence of 70 months is clearly unconstitutional.
Not if it's imposed as a discretionary matter by the judge, which was the alternative sentence here.
Actually, I believe that it would be even if it were, because the judge had to make factual findings that a jury did not make in order to put Mr. Rodriguez in the 2 subsection, which would allow for a greater sentence.
Not in a discretionary system. The judge can decide facts on his own in the exercise of his discretion and impose whatever sentence he or she believes to be appropriate. And so if we take the district court at its word that this is the exact same sentence that he would have imposed had it been, if the sentencing guidelines are unconstitutional and the sentencing system is purely discretionary, then there isn't any harm.
Actually, I believe that 18 U.S.C. 1326A1 provides for a maximum sentence of 2 years. The court would have to have found other facts in order to impose a sentence over 2 years, Your Honor. It's a complicated statute, and that was one of the reasons why Almendarez-Torres was such a long and winding case. Essentially, what happened was they wrote a statute, and according to the way that it was interpreted in Almendarez-Torres, the statute contains a sentencing enhancement. A1 provides for 2 years for the illegal reentry. A2 provides for up to 20 years for an illegal reentry with certain aggravating factors.
It's a felony.
After a conviction of a certain offenses.
Correct.
And doesn't the court always decide issues of existence of prior record, like a recidivist statute?
I believe that was true, Your Honor, but our law has been evolving. Booker, Blakely, Ring, Apprendi, and Jones have been changing the way that these factors are taken into. I think that the court can clearly see the import that our Supreme Court currently places on the Sixth and Fifth Amendment. Mr. Rodriguez has a Sixth Amendment right to be sentenced only on those factors for which he was convicted. Now, I concede that Judge Shabazz could and should do a discretionary sentence within the range of what he was convicted of. But this is a subsection that only has a 2-year maximum. He cannot have been convicted of the second subsection unless there were findings of fact that were made by Judge Shabazz. That is the only way that we can go past the 2 years. And that brings us to what this case really is. This is exactly the kind of case that the Supreme Court is concerned about, because this is the small tail wagging the big dog. For that illegal...
The fact of a prior conviction is, you say, the small... That's the tail?
No, Your Honor, the prior conviction is the enhancement, and that's the dog, because for the illegal reentry, the maximum sentence is 2 years. For that aggravated reentry, if the judge makes the findings of facts, it jumps up to 20 years, 10 times the sentence to which he would have been exposed without Judge Shabazz making findings of fact.
Well, now, is the finding of fact that he reentered after being deported for a felony?
If that were the only facts that the judge had to make, they might have met constitutional muster, but he has to find more than that.
Well, no, I thought that would put it to a maximum of 10 years. Am I wrong? I don't know this very well, but
I believe that
that's when you re-enter, right, and you've been deported for a felony, right, that now that brings the max up to 10 years, not 2 years.
Actually, this case is a lot like what happened in Jones. It's a complicated statute because the original crime has a level, and then they have subsections that they call sentencing enhancements. And in Jones, they were found to be unconstitutional as well. And the reason why is because the judge has to make these facts that are more than just findings that the crime was committed.
Well, because Jones didn't involve prior convictions.
Correct. Jones was...
That's an element, an enhancing, right, statute.
Right. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, Your Honor. Is this an element, or is this a sentencing enhancement, or does it even matter? I don't believe that it does matter, because the Supreme Court has said that if it is something that is going to enhance this person's sentence, then it needs to be decided by a jury.
But what is there more than the prior conviction that is at issue here that has to be found?
The prior conviction has to have been committed, and it has to have been aggravated. And we objected at the trial court.
Isn't that a legal issue? The characterization of the crime, isn't that a legal issue?
I don't believe that it is.
I think the case law says that it is. What constitutes an aggravated felony is a legal issue.
Right. Even if that were true, Mr. Rodriguez's argument would still be meaningful, because had that issue been put before a jury, it may or may not have made a difference in his decision whether to plea or go to trial.
But if the case law says that that is a legal issue, not a factual issue, it doesn't go to the jury.
But that's exactly my point, Your Honor. These are the kinds of facts that should be going to the jury. These are what Ring, Apprendi, Booker say should be going to a jury.
So you're just quarreling with the proposition that whether or not a particular crime is an aggravated felony is a legal issue. You think it's a factual issue.
I think that it can be either one, but I think that it's an issue regardless of whether it's legal or actually, I guess it isn't regardless. If it's a factual issue, we believe that it is. I believe that it's something that a court should find. But more importantly, and I want to end with this now, Almendarez-Torres made a small exception for prior criminal convictions. It did not make an exception, a huge general exception, for facts revolving around a prior conviction, and it also doesn't go to these cases. This case is different than Almendarez-Torres, because Almendarez-Torres never objected in the courts below, only in the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. O'Shea?
Good morning, Your Honors. Tim O'Shea for the United States. There are two questions here. The first one is whether or not there's a Sixth Amendment injury at all, and then the second question is whether or not it's harmless error. And I'll address those two in turn. The Booker case confirmed that the Sixth Amendment is not implicated at all when the court makes findings relating to a prior conviction. And in doing so, it affirmed its precedent in Apprendi and Blakely, and ultimately back to Almendarez-Torres. Now, the defendant attempts to distinguish Almendarez-Torres, saying that, hey, I objected at the sentencing court that my prior aggravated felony was an aggravated felony. Well, I think Mr. Delia really wishes he'd made that argument, but the fact is Mr. Delia did not make that argument. He conceded that it was an aggravated felony, and he also conceded that the sentence would be higher than 2 years. The defendant did talk about the qualifying felony in both his objections, which are attached to the pre-sentence report, and in arguing its sentencing. But rather than saying, hey, this is not a qualifying felony, what the defendant was saying is, this is really a de minimis aggravating felony. What happened here is that the defendant sold a very small amount of heroin to an undercover law enforcement officer. So he wasn't saying that it was not a qualifying felony, but rather that it was really just about as dinky or small of an aggravating felony as could be possible. And that was his argument. The reason I know for darn sure that the defendant did not argue through his attorney that a sentence of two, that the court was circumscribed to 2 years, is at page 40 of the defendant's objections. Mr. Delia says that the appropriate sentence is 46 to 47 months. Obviously, that is considerably higher than the 2 years that the defense suggests now is appropriate. Then the next question is whether or not the main argument is targeted against the constitutionality of 8 U.S.C. section 1326, and the defendant suggests that it's plain error. He suggests that it's not plain error. The government submits that it is. It's sort of an academic issue, but it's clearly plain error. When pressed in his reply brief to say where he preserved that objection, he points not to his own arguments, his own writing, but rather to something I said at sentencing, and that's not the way it works. An advocate must give the district court the first opportunity to resolve an issue, and he must really make an argument and preserve it. He can't just point to the argument of an advocate. But as I say, that is somewhat of an academic issue, because under Almendarez-Torres, unambiguously, this statute, section 1326, is constitutional. What specifically does the Supreme Court say about 1326? The decision, the Supreme Court explicitly held that at page 246, the Congress has the power to treat recidivism as a sentencing factor for this statute. And that was 1326, the same one we're dealing with here. So the constitutionality of the statute is not reasonably in dispute. And this court has gone a little bit further, saying, Morris case being the primary one, saying that not only can the court make findings relating to a prior conviction, but you can find the specific details relating to that conviction. And Your Honor, I think you asked what it was about Almendarez-Torres that the district court or the sentencing court ultimately had to find. Not just that it was a prior conviction, but it was aggravating of a specific type, and that it occurred in the district court. In sentencing, Mr. Almendarez-Torres had to find when it occurred in relation to the defendant's deportation, just like Judge Chavez had to do here. The exact same situation, and the Supreme Court said that was perfectly all right.
Date of conviction.
Date of conviction. Okay. I apologize.
Not date of act. Criminal act. Date of conviction.
Okay.
I'm just clarifying. Is that what has to be found?
When the aggravated felony conviction occurred in relation to the prior deportation. I apologize if I was unclear. Well, we turn then to the issue of harmless error. Booker, whether or not my 28J submission is all right or not, I respectfully submit that it is. But in any event, Booker, which is cited in the defendant's brief, tells appellate courts, look, even in the absence of a Sixth Amendment violation, you have to consider whether or not prudential doctrines of plain or harmless error apply. So let's talk a little bit about harmless error. There is no harmless error for two reasons. First of all, The district court, as I believe several members of the panel have noted, provided a discretionary sentence. Let's put it another way. He gave one sentence of 70 months, but the district court gave two bases for that. One, a mandatory guideline one, and the other one being the court's entirely own discretion. What did he base it on? The defendant's criminal history, his persistence in returning to the United States. And the third thing the district court relied upon was the court's view of the probable recidivism of the defendant.
Your opponent argues, however, that the statutory maximum would have been 2 years,
right,
absent the record of recidivism here. And so even if the judge discretionarily would have concluded that that prior record justified 70 months, he could not have imposed that sentence based on the what the defendant was convicted of.
Right, right. And obviously the defendant has a little bit of problem with that argument, arguing as he did to the district court that the district court should have imposed a sentence of 46 to 57 months. And also the other big problem is the Supreme Court has said, no, it's fine. It's fine. In Almendarez-Torres, the district court can consider prior convictions and the details relating to those convictions. But in any event, the defendant asked not just for a sentence within those parameters, but he also asked for a discretionary sentence. See, and that's what exactly what the defendant got. And because he got what he asked for, the error is necessarily harmless. So consequently, the fact that the district court had another basis, that is the guidelines, for the same sentence in addition to its own discretion, you know, the error is harmless. I respectfully submit that there is no genuine belief that the district court, if told to go to the middle, that is between mandatory application of the guidelines and its own discretion to use the advisory guidelines, would do anything different than 70 months. So accordingly, I respectfully submit that the error is harmless. I appreciate the court's attention, and I would ask the court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Delia? He's got about a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. What happened was the court said that it is further of the opinion that although this is perhaps the fact-finding that you're objecting to, counsel, but nonetheless, obviously, the judge thought this was an aggravated conviction when the sentence he rendered was imposed. So I think that objection was clearly made and clearly understood by the court. One of the other facts that would need to be found was that Mr. Rodriguez-Garza actually served a year in jail or prison as a result of that sentence. And there were, as I recall, no proof of that during his sentencing. But I also want to make note of the fact that we did object to the judge imposing dual sentences at the time because I didn't feel that the federal rules of criminal procedure allowed that. And then I did, in fact, argue for a lower sentence, having lost that objection. Now, this court has looked at Almendarez-Torres more than once, and as recently as its opinion in Pittman, this court has said Almendarez-Torres was different because no objection was made in the lower court. This case is different because it was. The objection was made, the statute is the law, 2 years is the maximum. If you look on the judgment of conviction, it says 8 U.S.C. 1326, nothing more. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. This case will be taken under advisement. I understand you're court appointed, right?
That's correct.
And thanks for the excellent advocacy on behalf of your client.
Thank you for the opportunity. Okay.